Friday morning to you. This is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR, and I am your third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, or as Bill Mash calls me, Pastor Jesse. That's because I am. Do have to say that the views and opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, its board of directors or underwriters or volunteers. I'm not even really representing the congregation that I serve as far as what my views and opinions are, but I love it when we're able to intersect and find that common ground. We celebrate diversity in all of its infinite combinations here on KZFR, and we are thankful for you, the listeners, and especially thankful for the support that you showed towards us through the pledge drive that we had. We did well, and I have a lot of gratitude for you. Makes me love Chico more, and that is what the show is about today. At least the first hour of this show, I want to focus on how much I love Chico. And I've got some guests on here who are going to address the message that we send about Chico out into the world. Right now, there seems to be this false narrative, in my opinion, false narrative that Chico is somehow an unsafe place and that it's this just shy of an apocalyptic wasteland where nobody feels safe to live. But I disagree. I think Chico is a wonderful place to live. I enjoy all of the things that Chico has to offer. Do we have our issues? Heck yeah, everybody has their issues. Every town has their share of challenges. But this is Chico, folks. My first interview is coming right up. My first guest this morning is Angela McLaughlin, a local IT consultant and activist. Angela is a member and one of many organizers for a solution-driven group of concerned citizens called Stand Up for Chico. Now, I have to make a confession that I am not a fan of social media, but there are days when I am guilty of taking a deep breath and browsing Facebook. And the first time I saw the link for Stand Up for Chico on my newsfeed, I took the bait. I clicked it, and lo and behold, it sent me to a page that listed restaurants, cool places to visit, opportunities to volunteer, links to news stories about people in Chico who are trying to make a difference and make life better for others. And honestly, I was expecting something entirely different because there are other Facebook pages that have similar names to Stand Up for Chico that don't seem to paint a very positive picture of Chico. And in fact, if anything, they make Chico sound like an apocalyptic hellscape that needs to be taken back. So Angela, first of all, welcome to the program. And secondly, what is Stand Up for Chico and what inspired you to become involved?
So Stand Up for Chico is a political action committee. And it was a brainchild of a group of us last summer as we watched the Safe Chico folks evolve. And it was just this really ugly narrative that dominated the community for the entire year.
Yeah.
And I mean, it could be boiled down to you and your family are not safe. And that wasn't most of us. That wasn't our experience in Chico. I mean, and that's not to say that there aren't any concerns, because of course there are. But you know, overall the statistics, the actual statistics from Chico PD showed that crime was down. Most people that I know go downtown, go to the parks, go for a bike ride, go for a walk, and don't feel particularly fearful. And so there was just this tremendous gap, and it became really obvious to us that that what was driving this narrative was this, you know, it was out of town political consultants. The Safe Chico PAC raised something like 200 and $230,000 or $240,000 by the end of their run. Most of that money was spent out of the area, like 99% of that money. They had political consultants from down south working on crafting these narratives. And it was really a cynical attempt to take over the city, and it worked.
So you're saying that people in Chico hired people from outside of town, or was it just they used people from out of town for their purposes, not necessarily paying them?
They actually hired people from out of town. And that was local folks, but I think a lot of people didn't understand there was just a ton going on in the background, and I didn't understand at first when I became involved. For instance, James Gallagher donated $10,000 to them, and when he, Chico's a blue dot in the North State. Mm. And so for Jim Gallagher to be able to say to his donors going forward, if he wants to go for LaMalfa's position or some other position in the future, he can say, look, I flipped the one blue dot in Northern California. Here's what I can do. We were kind of a showpiece for certain folks. And then there were, of course, folks in town that were genuinely concerned. They saw the proliferation of tents, and they heard a lot about the needle exchange. So to some extent, they were taken. I think a lot of people were taken advantage of. So anyway, for us at Stand Up, just kind of looking at all this, we just thought, gosh, this doesn't represent our experiences here. It doesn't represent our sense of community. It was just ugly and mean spirited, and so that was really what drove us to start creating something different.
Sure. So somebody's trying to sink the blueberry in the tomato soup sea up here.
Right.
So I've been in Chico for 13 years now, and I love Chico. In fact, if you were to ask me the things that I like most about Chico, a lot of them have improved. When I first came here, I was blown away how bike-friendly this town is. And I've lived in Eugene, Oregon before, so to say that Chico is a bike-friendly, an impressive bike-friendly town is to say a lot. And since I've been here, they've built new trails, they've expanded it so much. Yes, there has been, as you said, a proliferation of tents. There has been a housing crisis that has existed here before the campfire, and a housing emergency that has been ongoing since the campfire. But as far as quality of life in Chico, yeah, we face some challenges, but I'm just not buying into that Chico's going to hell in a handbasket narrative. And so one of the things that I noticed perusing Stand Up for Chico is people saying that we need to do better at messaging in order to change this narrative. What does that mean to you?
We're thinking a lot about that. And before I go on, I just want to say about the proliferation of tents. The proliferation of tents, the tents that people saw didn't indicate, and I don't want it to sound like I'm indicating that it did. It didn't indicate that there was an explosion of homeless people in our community.
Mm-hmm.
It indicated that people weren't being moved along every day as they have been in the past, and so there was increased visibility. And so I just want to be cautious about that.
Sure.
When we talk about messaging, we're really thinking about the power of images in our community. I mean, we've seen how affected the community was by this message. It was so primal. You and your family are not safe here is such a simple and primal message. And what we really experienced in the months leading up to the election was we spent a lot of time saying, but here are the facts. And we presented multiple reports from Chico PD that showed that crime was actually down and had been going down every year since 2017. And it didn't matter. That people said, well, that just shows that people gave up and aren't reporting it. There was no facts mattered when it came to that kind of primal messaging. And so I think we're thinking a lot about how do we change this and give the community something to feel good about, something to feel positive about, and how do we, for lack of a better way to discuss it, I mean, how do we make the facts palatable? Mm. And there's been a lot of research that shows that that people become entrenched in a belief system. Like once they believe something, they actually, if you demonstrate to them that their belief is wrong, they will actually become stronger in that belief, like that they just cannot let it go. And so
facts don't matter? Is that just a fancy way of saying facts don't matter?
I mean it is. And how do we make that matter?
Right.
That's just a lot of what we've been talking to a lot of different people, a lot of groups in town, and how do we make this? How do we reinvigorate the sense of people's sense of being invested in the community and invested in the positives of the community. What is a palatable, what's a way to share this information that it can be, I don't know. I mean, the fear-based messaging really was just an echo of Trump's America.
Mm, yeah.
There's always a scapegoat. And there's always somebody that's coming to get your job, that's coming to get your home, that is, your kids aren't safe with them. And again, it's so primal for folks. I mean, we all want to be safe, of course, and
sure,
we want our children to be safe. And it's challenging.
Yeah, and that's what I don't get in the accusations that people throw out there is, oh, these people, whoever the other is, the folks who are perpetrating this narrative is kind of blows my mind, because it makes it sound like we don't want Chico to be safe,
No.
I mean, do we just go on out and plan, ooh, how I could make Chico not safe now? We could, I don't know. It's kind of like when people talk about the gay agenda, Well, what the heck is the gay agenda? Okay. What the heck is the agenda of the folks who just want there to be equality and decent housing and decent jobs and such? We want pretty parks,
Yeah.
We want to be able to enjoy everything that Chico has to offer. We want people to have homes,
Yeah.
Well, if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR, and Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Natural Foods Cooperative, offering a variety of organic and local produce, organic groceries and supplements. The co-op has hot food, ready-to-eat sandwiches, and cold brew coffee. The co-op now accepts online orders for curbside pickup. Chico Natural Foods Co-op, open every day on the corner of 8th and Main in downtown Chico. And by Chico Velo, supporting bicycling, education, and advocacy since 1980. Chico Velo encourages you to ride your bicycle and park it safely at their bike valet when available at the Thursday night market and the Saturday farmers market. For more information, visit chicovelo.org and find them on Facebook. And if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR, and I am talking to Angela McLaughlin today about messaging and how we change the narrative here in Chico from it's not safe to it's an awesome place. So here's the question, Angela. What sort of message would you like people to hear about Chico and how to make it a better place to live?
Yeah. So, there's just so many. There's so many positive messages about Chico, and we try to find a balance in what we post between posting. Obviously we have concerns, and so we post about those. We try to find a balance between highlighting, even with COVID, we still have a lot of great cultural activities. There's a virtual show at the Turner Gallery at Chico State right now.
Mm.
And you can do a 360, like, walk around the gallery. There's going to be an artist talk, and the artist has been doing doing art that has political commentary, social political commentary, for, I want to say, 25, 30 years. So there's a chance to engage with him in a Zoom call. We've got still a lot going on, and again, it's kind of startling given that COVID has had so many things locked down. And our parks are still beautiful, and we're still safe out there. So, you know, I think part of this is going to come from folks that are actually living in Chico.
Mm.
You know, posting, gosh, don't post a picture of the tent that you saw. I mean, it's a cheap shot. It's cruel to the person that's living in the tent, and it does nothing to solve the problem. You know, post a picture I go for a walk. It's gorgeous out right now.
Yeah.
It's springtime. There are so many wonderful experiences, beautiful places. I think if we as a community can start focusing on that, and you know, share that information, share those pictures, that is part of it, of just sort of, we're going to have to gradually shift the perception, and it's better to show than tell. You know, what our community actually looks like and who we are. And who we are isn't a group that is just trying to drive people out of town because they don't have shelter.
Yeah. So I've got to ask you, what is your favorite thing about Chico?
Oh, man. There's so many.
So many to choose from, I know.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, gosh, but, I mean, the park obviously is the gem of our community, and that's been one of the things that's been so frustrating about this narrative this past year, is that, you know, if you say it's not right to move people because they don't have a place to go, people just say, well, you don't care about our parks, and, of course, that's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I love our parks, and I think most people that are concerned about these issues also love our parks, and I'm concerned about the environment. All of those things, and so the parks are amazing, and then also the people.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever frustrations I sometimes have with some of the things that go on in Chico, these are some of the friendliest, kindest folks, and I'm often reminded just of how terrific and giving our community is. You know, you put anything out there, you say that somebody's in trouble, somebody shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple people show up, and I can count on it. You know, we've seen issues with, you know, the evictions lately of the homeless. You know, I can put something out there and say, you know, we need help. This person can't move everything by themselves. And people will show up in minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of, we have a really loving, caring community that is focused on doing good. And I think that gets lost.
Yes. And I understand what you mean when somebody says, well, you don't care about the park. And we're like, yes, we don't care about the park. But how do we keep this from being a loop of shouting matches of, you don't care about the park? Oh, yeah, you don't care about people. Oh, yeah, you don't care about the park. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't think neither one of those things are true. I don't think that there are very many people who truly do not care about people. You know, because like you say, we live in a community where that it's evident for the amount of times that we need to pull together and help each other. We're there. A lot of Red Cross people were blown away by how quickly we were able to mobilize after the campfire and come together. And that's Chico to me. So I know people care about people. How do we keep this from just being a shouting match back and forth? How do we come together?
Yeah, that's the question we're really grappling with. My intuition is that we need to get back to talking about our shared values.
Mm-hmm.
because, yeah, of course. I mean, I don't think most people actually think it's okay that someone's suffering on the streets.
Right.
And yet the approach is very different. And I think there's a sense that there's a sense for some folks that that person is just taking advantage of them.
Mm.
So it's like, what are our shared values? How do we want to treat people in our community, whatever their socioeconomic spectrum is? And I think that's part of it, is thinking of what are our shared values and how do we come back around those?
It sounds like you're saying we should treat other people as we would want to be treated ourselves. That's
right.
I've read that somewhere, and daggone it, I just cannot put my finger on where I've read that.
Yeah. Oh,
my word.
But I mean, how do we bring people back to that core that I think we all feel? I really truly believe most of us don't hate the humans in our community.
Yeah. But yet I think for a good long while, and I blame part of this, a small part of it, on social media. I put a lot of blame on talk show radio. Here I am, public affairs radio. Mm-hmm. We're talking, Angela. But yet for decades now, we've seen talk show radio hosts just spew hate, and people eat it up, and it reflects in their actions. So do you think part of changing our narrative, do you think part of our messaging needs, what part of that is getting it out there? How do we get that message out there?
I don't know. I mean, I think this is really what a lot of us are grappling with, and particularly in the post-Trump era.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big question mark. So the big challenge with messaging, and that we're all grappling with in the post-Trump era, is finding something that I don't know that we could ever make it as primal as the fear message. But how can we do that around love and community?
Right.
And Stand Up Chico's has been working and doing some outreach to a variety of groups in the community. With the hopes of having a meeting and really identifying some core issues that we can form a consensus on. Let's say, what are the top 3 to 5 issues in the community that matter to us and that we can agree on? Because, of course, you know, nobody's going to agree on everything. But
right.
We can identify a small core of things that we agree on and can work on together and kind of have a present a unified message. I think that will help us begin to move forward.
Yeah. And I'm not so sure when you say a primal message, and I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with a primal message. It all depends on where, what you are targeting, and that's a bad word. Targeting isn't exactly the word that I want to use. But as you said in the beginning, the narrative that we're trying to address is that it's not safe. You know, they're attacking some real base level Maslow's hierarchy of needs issue here. You are not safe. So what do you think the primal message of Stand Up for Chico is? What heartstrings are we going to tug on for people on both sides to say, you know, daggone it, Chico is great, and I do want to stand up and be a part of community solutions and addressing community issues?
Yeah, it's such a tough question, because when you are working at Maslow's hierarchy, is a great point. You know, you're addressing these sort of basic things.
Yes.
Do you have food? Do you have water? Do you have shelter? And so any message that you can use that hits on those things is really at the core of people's concerns.
Sure.
And so we love the community and we love the park. How do we shape that into something that hits those, that kind of core concern?
Yeah.
And that's really what we're grappling with this, and it's not very clear. And we're talking about doing a variety of projects, like are there things that we can coalesce around that just get us working together? Ideally, as COVID starts to go away, if we can have some working together in physical spaces and getting to know each other, whether that's community cleanups, we've talked about maybe providing some meals for a tourist shelter. And there's a lot of things that need to be done that we could work on together. And I think there's some of that is to rebuild connections.
Right. I notice that through my work with Safe Space, that's a place where people can come together. I live in a neighborhood that is red and blue right down the middle, and it's amazing how quickly we can get support on both sides for meals. We have a thing in our church right now is the wet weather gear drive, and our neighborhood came up with a lot of ponchos to help folks who are shelterless right now and facing the elements. So it is possible, because I've seen it. It just seems like a big uphill battle sometimes, and I appreciate you for wrestling with that. I know that a lot of folks are struggling with compassion fatigue, and yet here you are out there on the front lines rallying the troops to say, no, Chico is a great place to live. Where can people learn more about Stand Up for Chico? Where can you find Stand Up for Chico, and where can people learn more about it?
We're all over the place. Our website is www.standupchico.com.
Okay.
And on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, you can look for us at just hashtag or at standupchico and find us in any of those places. And we have a newsletter available if you want to keep up with things, or if you follow Facebook. Probably has the most comprehensive information, but if you follow us in any of those spots, you'll get regular updates.
Great. I like one of the things that I like most about it are some of the photographs that people, positive photographs that people post of the beautiful almond blossoms. Excuse me, I'm in Chico now. I need to be careful. The almond blossoms and birds of all sorts. And it's great to see people's love for Chico come out in their photography.
Yeah.
Angela, thank you so much for being on the show today. I appreciate your time, and I wish you the best in your work with Stand Up for Chico.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciated it.
And this is Peace and Social Justice on KZFR FM 90.1 Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. I am your third Friday host for Peace and Social Justice, Jesse Kearns, and welcome to the I Love Chico edition of Peace and Social Justice. Do you love Chico? I hope so. I do too. I've lived here for 13 years, and it's probably one of my favorite places that I've lived in my 54 years. So, yay Chico. Let's go on to our next interview. My second guest today is Stephen Marquardt, another local activist who loves Chico and wants to spread that love throughout the community. I'm most familiar with Stephen's association with Safe Space. Safe Space is a winter shelter that has been going on for a number of years now. This year it's a little bit different with COVID restrictions, but they are currently winding down at the First Christian Church and going on to another church. I also know Stephen from a community-supported agricultural project known as GRUBS, which stands for Growing Resourcefully and Uniting Bellies. I like that. Bellies are important to me, especially filling them. So my focus for the first hour of the show today is challenging and changing the current narrative that Chico is somehow an unsafe and undesirable place to live. And earlier in the show, I spoke with Angela McLaughlin about her involvement with Stand Up for Chico, a group of concerned citizens who are trying to find a new and positive way to deliver the message that Chico is, in fact, a great place to live, and to make sure that this message is delivered clearly and concisely. One of the challenges, though, is how we find the common ground that we know exists in this community and to unite people to solve some of our city's biggest challenges. So, Stephen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
First thing I need to ask you before we go anywhere, what do you think is Chico's best feature and what is your favorite thing to do in Chico?
Wow, that is a really difficult question. You know, I think I've only been here about 2.5 years now.
Okay.
But I think what's really just the most beautiful thing about Chico is this deep and intimate and really committed sense of community in a way that I've never felt in a community before, and in ways that folks who are much older than I have shared that is unique to them in this area as well. So it makes me think that it is really specific to Chico. I mean, there's just so many different pockets of things where you can plug into to folks really just coming together to not only talk about the issues and formulate solutions, but really to enjoy the company and bringing music along, sharing food along the way, just really enjoying company. And, you know, whether that be on the plaza on Sundays, in community gardens, you know, in the KZFR studio, whether it be in at Grub, in Safe Space, you know, at the farmer's market, wherever it may be, there's a really just a cool sense of community that I've never felt. And people truly love this place and truly love the people in this area and really like to make people feel welcome. And I've certainly been very, very welcomed here. And, you know, that's, I guess, to the first part of the question. And then I can't even remember the second part.
What's your favorite thing to do? What is your favorite thing to do here in Chico?
Oh, that is difficult. I mean, I really
there's so many things, right?
I know there are so many things. I think it's so cliche to say that I really love our parks, but I truly do.
Uh-huh.
And so that's one thing. But to be honest, what I spend most of my weekends doing, which is my free time generally, is going to the farmers market and talking to folks. You know, whether it's vendors or nonprofits who are tabling or people who are canvassing on the outskirts. You know, there's As an organizer, I've been able to come close with so many people, and that's a great place for me to catch up with people and just kind of check in, as well as buy some great food. But that's a really lovely space for me, and I honestly think that might be it, because that's often what I'll go do to start my weekend off right, is to go chat with folks down there and buy some good, you know, pastries, whether it's from Near and Dear, some vegan pastries, or, you know, some veggies from Grub. And that might be it.
Yeah, I like the people from Chico too. I've just got to throw in something as far as I'm concerned. I've lived here for just a little over 13 years. I grew up in Oregon, and I don't know about us Oregonians. I grew up outside a little town in next to Eugene called Veneta, and people were kind of closed. You stayed out of people's business and you didn't really talk a lot about yourself, and there wasn't a lot of community things that didn't involve drinking or whatever. So I moved back to Virginia, and everything was, who are you and who are your people and what can we do for you and how can we integrate you into the community? A friendly folks back there. And so when we decided to move back to the West Coast, we thought, this is going to be a little different. And are our kids going to notice that the folks here are different than the friendly people over in Virginia? And when we came to Chico, people were friendly and wonderful. And it was great. You're right. The people are probably the best feature of Chico. Yeah. Of all the fun things you can do here, the people are the best.
Yeah. I think that's right.
So let's talk about these people. I have a Monday night Zoom check-in with some Chico folks who keep each other informed on what's going on and where we might be of service. And one week, on a day before a council meeting, someone brought up the subject of a town hall and how that might be a more effective way to come together rather than just doing the same old dance that never really seems to go anywhere at the city council meetings. And someone said, oh, you need to talk to Stephen Marquardt about that one. So tell me about town hall meetings and what they might do to effectively address some of our community's challenges.
Yeah. So just to backtrack, the first town hall I got to be a part of, which was one of still to this day, one of the most just incredible days of my life, was when Bernie Sanders held his climate town hall here in the summer of 2019.
Yep.
And, Sunrise Chico and myself got to be a part of that. And that was just a really incredible experience. And then we had, a packed room of 600-700 people and, over at the Masonic Center. And so if you were part of that or you caught wind of that, that was just, we saw the value in that. We had folks from local organizers to filmmakers to candidates to professors to Bernie himself, which is a really great representation of the type of work being done in this area. And so, with that idea of what a town hall could be in mind, we wanted to build off of the last two rallies that had been held outside of the city council meetings. In opposition to the way that the city is just completely abusing the human rights of our folks who are living on the streets. Mm-hmm. And those last two rallies were good, and they were, I think, really important to air our frustrations and show solidarity with the folks on the street. But after conversations with a couple of people who both were there and people who weren't able to make it, people were asking, what I can do, what they could do to help, how they can plug in. And there also seemed to be a lot of, just because of how many people are working on house situations, on housing solutions, it's kind of confusing. If you're not really in the loop, it's often overwhelming to understand what all was being done and really what's happening. And so all of those kind of conversations led myself and my good friend Mary Kay Benson to kind of come up with the idea of having a town hall on this past city council meeting as opposed to a rally. To get us caught up to speed on what's happening around housing and homeless human rights, as well as how people can plug in. And really, it's because we know that we have a city council that is not going to support this community. And therefore, it's real largely in our hands right now to organize ourselves and to get ourselves up to speed so that we can do whatever we have in our power, because we know that we're met with strong opposition on the council. And so it seemed to make a lot of sense to have a town hall to kind of bring all that together and hopefully begin many conversations to come in the public space around how we can support the unhoused community and how we can create the housing solutions that we need.
How do you address bringing people together? Because sometimes I get the feeling that both sides have just kind of given up on each other. And that's part of where our problem is. We have agendas, and the agenda is at the forefront of what we're doing. We're keeping that as at center stage, when really the issues that we're facing and the solutions that need to address these issues, I think, are what really matter. Is there a way through these town hall meetings to bring people together who might have radically different ideas about how to address some of our issues?
I think that we absolutely could make some ground and bring in folks from all over the spectrum and ideology to the table, to these town halls. So this past one, we really were focused on folks who probably align themselves on the quote unquote left of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But that's not to say that we couldn't also widen that to the right and bring folks in. And, really, I think a lot of it does come down to really simply being in face-to-face conversations in person, because even so much can get lost and so much can get misinterpreted incorrectly when it's online, when it's through a message, and it really is almost detrimental to progress when folks are just conversing online. And I know it's difficult now because of COVID and everything that's going on, but I do think, and we know we actually had conversations about maybe should we invite more, a wider range of counselors to the meeting on Tuesday? Should we invite other folks? And I think moving forward, we may do that if it feels right, because I do think there is progress to be made in having a space for all perspectives to be there. So can't say from experience recently that I know it will be successful, but I do think it's worth a shot, and I do think it's important that we come together to at least hear where we're at and see what common ground we can find, because I think that there is a lot of common ground to be had mm-hmm. with folks, and so that's an important place to start, and I would love for these kind of town halls, community discussions to get to that.
Yeah. I know in where I live, in my neighborhood, there is a almost 50-50 divide on people who might identify as the left and the right. And sometimes that can be frustrating, but I know there has been times when we have been able to pull some people in as volunteers at Safe Space, when we could have volunteers at Safe Space.
Right.
And there are some things that we can come together on. And as you said earlier, one of the best features about Chico are the people. And the conversations that we can strike up at the market. In my neighborhood, I know that even the reddest red person there, who knows I lean on the blue, has got my back on a lot of things, that I can count on that person to have my back, and they can count on me to have their back on some issues. So there, in a lot of ways, there is a relationship established there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a community in Chico, relationships mean a lot to people here. It's a priority. I believe a lot of people like you believe that one of the best features of Chico are the people and the relationships that we can build. So what has to happen in the town halls first in order to bring people together? I know you addressed that just a little bit in what you just said, but I'd like to narrow in on that a little bit more. What is your vision for that? Uniting folks.
Yeah. Well, I think obviously, you know, for uniting folks, it's what Tuesday was about was convening around the issue that is on the minds of the entire city, on the city council, in the media, and on, you know, in groups that are doing work on the ground. You know, the election talked a lot about the unhoused folks.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it starts obviously with the issue that's on everybody's mind, which right now we know is housing in our unhoused community. And then really, I think it's important to get as many different perspectives as possible. And like I said, we didn't get the whole full ideological spectrum of perspectives on Tuesday, but we did get, even within the left, there's a lot of different perspectives on how to address the issue at hand.
For sure.
So we tried to bring, you know, as many different people, and to be honest, we had folks on our panel who really have some rough history and are actually not quite on speaking terms, but they came together for this panel to share the work that they're doing because they were able to ground themselves in the values that align us, which is, you know, dignity and human rights and just the basic things that everybody is entitled to. And so that was really nice to see. And honestly, I felt really good to see folks who really are kind of at odds behind the scenes for personal things kind of come together and still put on a really beautiful display of community discussion in the public space. So, yeah, you know, rallying around the issues at hand, bringing as many different perspectives as possible, and also keeping it, you know, this is kind of a random one, but it's like keeping it structured and keeping it short and keeping it to the point. And so we actually were pretty adamant on people sticking to the time, people sticking to the issue that we asked them to speak to, so that it really was respecting everyone else's ability to share what they had to say. And it was respecting everyone's time who came to show up, because we know that people have so much time. And so that, I think, is an important element that people really actually appreciate, is that we kept it short, kept it moving, and kept engaged in that way. And, you know, really kind of just even including folks from the street. I mean, I think it's important to bring, since we're sitting here talking about how we can address this population, it's important that we bring that population to the table. And so we were able to do that on Tuesday, and we hope to really increase that engagement moving forward so that it's not just a couple of voices, but a wider range. And, you know, one thing that we didn't get to do as much of that I'd like is really have more time for the attendees to engage with each other at the space. We had a little bit of time for that. You know, at the beginning and the end, there's always that natural discussion that come up as people are waiting for the show, which was a really beautiful thing to see. But something like we saw in the summer after the uprisings, when they had the discussions in the plaza and the people's assemblies. They did a really good job of having such engaging events where it wasn't so much listening, but really a back and forth conversation. And so I would like to get to that moving forward. But we think Tuesday was just kind of setting the grounds for understanding where we are and what we can do, and then moving forward, let's bring in more conversation. And I think some of that conversation is going to have to be from people on the right, and just to get a broader perspective. And I don't know how that's going to play out. I think it's going to be a little bit of, you know, we're going to have to think through that a little bit. But I do think that is an important, because it's to be determined how we play that out. But I really would welcome it. And I think there is, you know, like I said, some common ground to be found.
Yeah.
And, I don't know how much I really dug into the question you asked there, but those are some things that are coming up.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR, People Powered Community Radio. And Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Quicksilver Courier Services. Established in 2010, Quicksilver Courier Service has the flexibility to provide a broad range of delivery services. Quicksilver provides courier services for private individuals as well as for legal, medical, and business professionals. Visit ChicoCourier.com for quality 24/7 delivery service, and by Duffy's Tavern on the corner of 4th and Main in Chico for over 30 years. Duffy's is now open for pickup and delivery services from 5 to 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday nights. Go to Duffy's.com or call 530-343-7718 to pre-order. Follow Duffy's on Instagram and Facebook for updates. Stay safe, and here's to another 30 years. Again, this is Peace and Social Justice. I'm your third Friday host, Jesse Kearns, and I'm here with Stephen Marquardt, and we're talking about town halls as a way of helping us solve some of our city's biggest challenges. So the conversation that I had with Angela kind of ties into what we are saying. We're talking about messaging and what is our message. And you were saying that you were able to bring some people who might be considered leaning to the left together, and some of these folks are maybe not on speaking terms and things. And I've always heard, and I don't know whether I agree with this or not, but some people see, yeah, the left eat each other, and that's why we find ourselves in trouble sometimes. I don't know how true that is, but you know, there's maybe an element of truth in that. And one of the things that we had come up on this Monday night group that I'm a part of is the clarity of our message. Because the message that we're getting from people on the right is Chico is not a safe place. That's it. That is the content of the message. There's other things that go into that, but that is what is in the spotlight. Chico is not safe. In your world, Stephen, in your ideal, what would be the message? What would be the simple message that we can unite around that will help us solve some of our issues and challenges?
Well, the way I see Chico is really the potential leader for not only the state, but really the country and beyond, because we are one of the most fertile regions of the world in terms of what we can produce agriculturally.
Mm-hmm.
And that sets us up for, you know, just so many opportunities to not only feed ourselves, but our neighbors in a way that is in line with what's needed to address environmental disasters and the climate catastrophe that we're at hand.
Right.
And so in that way, that's one aspect. And then another aspect is that this is really, there is so many people that care so deeply about this place, and so many talented, so many committed folks in this community that this homelessness in Chico really can be solved, and we can house everybody, we can feed everybody, we can make sure that everybody is secure and having their needs met. And so, you know, I do see Chico it could be a place that is just a model for the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's kind of like what I would like to kind of put forward. Is not that it's not safe, because that's honestly absurd. Safety is really not an issue here in Chico any more than it might be in any other city. But it's that we actually could be a leader, and that we should be a leader, and that we can provide not only for ourselves, but for the communities well beyond Chico. And I would like to see us more as we're a powerful, influential, and a city. And I'd like to see us lean into that aspect rather than one that's falling apart and dangerous.
Yeah. And we know we can do that, too. After the campfire, there were so many people from Red Cross and FEMA who said, my word, you all mobilized quickly. We were on top of things. And so I know we are capable of that. I know this community has compassion. One of the things that I guess bothers me is the labels that we throw at each other and the assumptions that we have. One of the assumptions is, you don't care about people, and on the other hand side is, you don't care about our safety, and that's not true. Everybody cares about safety. That's one of the basic Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We care about other people and the dignity of human life. I think everybody has that within them, but we're facing some crises in our community right now, namely our housing crisis that turned into a housing emergency and hasn't gotten any better. So that's what's on the table. It's just trying to dig in and find that spirit that brought us together back in 2018 after the campfire and put it into action now.
Right.
So what does your ideal town hall meeting look like? What people are gathering for this town hall, and what's the agenda, and what does that meeting look like?
Well, I think this time, or what we had on Tuesday, was a great start. One thing I definitely would like to see is some music, whether it be before or after or both. I think live music is just one of the most beautiful things that we can appreciate in this life, and it's certainly been lacking in the past year during the pandemic. So that's one aspect I would love to have. If we're talking just ideal world, no COVID pandemic over or sitting over our head, but also coming together over some food, and I would love to have some food provided. Yeah. And that's an important piece of gathering. I'd love to have some space set aside with maybe some guiding questions for people to really just engage in some conversations with attendees to engage with each other. I think maybe some hands-on stations, whether it be maybe an art build, or maybe it's some sort of, maybe not necessarily letter writing, but something to express ourselves and express our opinions and express where we're coming from through a different medium. So in some kind of engaging stations in that way. And then, a lineup of speakers that are really representative of the people doing the work in this town, or the people representing the communities of who we are trying to serve. Mm-hmm. And so, which is what we started to get out on Tuesday. And then keeping it short, keeping it brief, people's remarks brief, keeping it moving, that's an important piece of it, like we said. And we had a Q&A, which actually was really, really, really a great part of Tuesday's event. Was we opened it up to public questions at the end for our panel, and we got some really good conversation out of that. And I really would like to bring that forward and make sure we increase that type of engagement and just organic discussion. So, those are definitely a couple of things I would like to see. I would love to see it become something that is fairly regular. Because I think, and potentially that becomes a space where organizing is happening. Mm. Maybe that is not only just a place to learn and to listen and engage in that community, but maybe also there's time for people to sit down and hammer out where we're going next, and what projects need to be started, or what collaboration needs to be had, and who needs to talk to who because they're doing this project, and what is the planning out what the next meeting is going to look like, and maybe how do we outreach to this community next time, and maybe that's the space where that organizing happens in person. That would be wonderful to see as a part of it. Yeah. That's a lot of things that could happen, but I think there's very much a desire for people to just convene generally because of what we've gone through the past year. but also to really dig in and do some work, some meaningful work to tackle these issues, because we've sat with them for a year and we're realizing how many things are needing to be fixed and are needing our engagement. So I do think people would be happy to spend a couple hours at these town halls if it were able to have music and have some food and have some good lighthearted community discussion and just that aspect of enjoying company, but also a little bit more focused on the issues. So, you know, you can tell obviously I haven't thought through this all too thoroughly just yet, but those are just some of the pieces I think we need and I think people would enjoy. And, you know, also I'm just happy to talk this through with a lot of different folks who helped with that last event and who have done similar events in the past and really take this into the future being something that's just a representative of the desires of many of the influential leaders in this community and really just do what we can while we have a council that's a little bit difficult.
Yes. So do you have a town hall scheduled in the future?
So at the current moment, nothing scheduled.
Okay.
But we do, there's been a little bit of a discussion of potentially having alternating. So the rough plan that's been discussed is to have a presence at every city council meeting moving forward, which we've had the past three city council meetings. Now, whether each one is going to look like a town hall, that's to be determined. But I think in those upcoming city council meetings, we will have some more for sure. And so that's all to be determined. This is kind of all being pulled together pretty quickly and with a newly forming group. So all those details to be announced. But I do think there's going to be some more in the future, and I would imagine that they'll be in front of those city council meetings.
Fantastic. Well, Stephen, it was great to have you on the show, and I think it's good. You say you don't know whether you've got your head wrapped around all of the things here, but it's good to talk about this because that's how we come to solutions, is in dialogue. So it's been wonderful dialoguing with you today, Stephen. And I thank you,
so you
for all the help that you do and all the work that you do with Safe Space as well. Thank you for being on the show. All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Is your car frozen? Let it go. Those expensive car repairs that once controlled you, well, they can't get to you at all once you've donated it to KZFR. It's easy, and KZFR takes care of everything at no cost to you. Whether it's running or not, your car, truck, and even boat has the potential to bring significant funds to support your favorite programs. Here's how to give. Go to kzfr.org to complete our online donation form, or call 888-593-7288. That's 888-593-7288.
If you're just tuning in, this is Peace and Social Justice here on KZFR 90.1. And Peace and Social Justice is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the local, seasonal, and organic offerings at Farm Star Pizza, where the farmer is the star. Farm Star features artisan pizzas, salads, appetizers, and desserts. They have vegan and gluten-free offerings, craft beer, and eclectic wines. Farm Star Pizza is open 7 days a week for to-go lunch and dinner orders. Find Farm Star Pizza at 2359 The Esplanade at farmstarpizza.com and on Facebook. The phone number to order is 343-2056. And by Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, family-owned, operated, and argued over since 1980, reminding listeners to think for themselves, but drink with others. Again, this is Peace and Social Justice. I did want to give kind of a public service announcement here before we go into our final segment. This is from Chico Housing Action Team, and I said that I would read this on the air. This is to the community. There seems to be some misunderstanding about Chico Housing Action Team, CHATS, program. We want everybody to have the correct information about the two programs that have been mentioned in social media on a list of shelter bids. Shelters are very important and desperately needed in Chico, but CHATS' focus is permanent housing, and CHATS has no overnight only or emergency shelter programs at present. The 175 people CHAT currently provides housing for are permanent residents who pay rent, live in their homes full-time, and cook for themselves. The difference is they are provided with support services from our case managers, friendship and encouragement from CHAT volunteers, and referrals to help them learn skills that will help them remain housed. CHAT currently has a backlog of 216 applications for homeless residents seeking permanent housing. Everhart Village will be a tiny house emergency shelter for approximately 20 Butte County Behavioral Health clients. Behavioral Health will refer clients to live in the village and provide them with mental health services. CHAT will build the village, maintain it, and provide case management and supportive services. However, a great deal of infrastructure work has to be completed before people can move in. We are hopeful that clients will be able to move in by December 2021. CHAT is not moving forward to rent the townhouse motel property because of challenges in reaching agreement on the terms of the lease and because CHAT's desire to keep its primary focus on permanent housing. We are still open to purchasing the townhouse motel if we can reach an agreement with the owners. Also, we are continuing to look at other permanent housing options. We hope this provides accurate information regarding CHAT's programs. We welcome any questions you may have. Please send us an email at info@chicohousingactionteam.net. Thank you for sharing accurate information about our programs. Forever grateful, Chico Housing Action Team. And now for our final segment.
Guillermo Mash for Imagining Communities, spotlighting the Kern Project, who have been inspiring adventure and elevating women with their outdoor small grant program since 2016. We discovered the Kern Project, covering the Sacramento Source to Sea. This is how Jamie Trapp, the filmmaker and the three-woman paddling crew, describes the endeavor. Last fall, I was asked to join two rad Shasta gals on a source to sea of the 400-plus mile-long Sacramento River. Our goal is to collect stories from the plethora of stakeholders along California's largest river from an open-minded perspective. People have depended on the abundance of this watershed for 12,000 years. Today, that might look like farmers, anglers, rafters, tourists, city folk, hydroelectric workers, biologists, etc. The more networking we have done, the more we are discovering just how much passion and controversy surrounds this river. My job is to bring these stories together into a film that raises the voices of the diverse range of stakeholders. If you're interested in learning more or following along, check out SacSourceToSea.com. The women departed amidst a weather advisory in the Lake Siskiyou area on Sunday, March 14th. They plan to arrive in Chico for a layover around the 22nd or the 23rd, camping at Grub CSA Farm. We're fortunate, very fortunate, to open our segment with audio excerpts from the recent YouTube video titled, Would You Like Ice With That? Produced by outdoor adventurer Annie Lee Outside to raise money for the Kern Project. Let's take a listen.
Yep, that's me, Annie. I don't like getting wet and I hate cold water. I don't even own a swimming costume. But to fundraise for the Kern Project, an organisation that funds outdoor education and wilderness programmes for women, I'm going to be immersing myself in cold water every day this month. And luckily for me, I was starting this challenge in the middle of Scotland's coldest winter for 10 years.
When I was 16, I got a funded place on an outdoor education week, similar to the projects that the Kern Project supports. And it had this huge effect on me. Like, I was this really awkward 16-year-old who's kind of scared of her own face. And that week gave me so much confidence. It helped me step into the person I wanted to be. And it had a huge influence on my life completely. So that's really why I wanted to fundraise, because I think it's so important that other young women get that same experience that I had. But this was not meant to be my fundraiser. I was not going to be throwing myself in cold water. I was meant to be doing a big bike ride around the Scottish Highlands, but with our fast-changing COVID rules, I had to accept that that plan wasn't going to work. So I might not be doing biking as my fundraiser anymore, but I'm still going to be riding to most of the different lochs and rivers for my dips. I just need to work out how to strap my axe onto the rock. Because I live in the Cairngorms National Park, which is such an amazing place for swimming. There are so many different lochs and rivers and just really beautiful places to get in the water.
Coming up next, an Imagining Community phone interview with Alison Wright, who founded the Cairn Project along with Sarah Castle back in 2016.
The Cairn Project, you know, the inspiration for it is actually another kind of epic California adventure. My co-founder, Sarah, and I, back in 2016, we got permits to hike the John Muir Trail in the Sierra. And over the course of, you know, a year or so of like planning and prep and training and all that, we kind of had this moment where we thought to ourselves, you know, maybe there's some way we can turn this big backpacking trip into something that gives back or a good cause in some way. And, you know, we pretty quickly settled on the focus of wanting to support organizations or an organization that is connecting young women to nature and to outdoor opportunities. And so we were sort of mulling that idea for a while. And as we did so, we realized, you know, there's so many groups out there, so many local groups. Sometimes they're volunteer run, but often very, at the very least on shoestring budgets, and really doing that work of connecting girls and young women in their communities to local landscapes and sometimes, you know, farther afield. Really, we're like, we can't pick one group, so maybe we need to figure out a way to support a bunch of groups. So we kind of settled on that idea of founding an organization that would raise money that then is passed on to organizations around the country getting girls outside. And the Cairn Project, the name, I don't know. I think back to like the Google sheet of our weird name ideas, but something about, you know, the imagery of cairns and sort of evoking this sense of a path and of, yeah, like, mm-hmm, you know, a pursuit, but also of finding one's own way and following sort of the guidance of others, but still really on your own path. So that's more or less where that idea came from.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, I've hiked just a sliver of the John Muir Trail on a day hike from Tuolumne Meadows up to Pyramid Lake.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, yeah, that's just such a gorgeous up there.
Oh, man, it was an amazing experience. I mean, such a privilege to get to take the time to do that. And, you know, doing so, having, for that first hike, we, you know, between the two of us with our kind of personal networks, we had raised, you know, about $30,000. And so kind of having this idea of all these people just having cheered us on and, you know, really believing in it, it definitely made some of the harder climbs, you know, a little bit easier. We opted to hike it pretty quickly. We did it in 11 days. So there were some really long, long days in there, but it was really a special experience.
Well, as another experienced hiker, it's always better on the way up and on the way down. I'd rather go up than down, especially at 60.
Oh, man. Yeah, I believe you. It's funny. We were just joking the other day that we'll have to do that again when we're 50. And I was like, I don't know about the descent from Mount Whitney.
Yeah.
That's going to be brutal.
Exactly. That's such a wonderful story. And I just loved, I think your website's very well put together. It's very visually, and for listeners, that you can find the Cairn Project. Cairn is that's the pronunciation. It's CARNproject.org. But it's wonderful visuals. It's right to the point and some inspiring language. But I just love your tagline, inspiring adventure, elevating women. And there's someone on like a kayak out on a lake with these wonderful granite cliffs in front of them. It's just beautiful.
I mean, inspiring adventure, elevating women. I think there's a lot of pieces to it, right? Like, our core mandate is to raise resources for programs serving young women, right? Girls and young women, and connecting them to nature, to outdoor adventure, to outdoor education opportunities. I think where I live in California and the Bay Area and other places, you know, it can be easy to lose sight of the fact that women and particularly girls remain very, very inequitably served, you know, with those sorts of opportunities. So that's the core thing. But there's a broader mission of elevating women and bringing together a community like the women who are about to embark on this epic, you know, paddle trip, who are really passionate about outdoor adventure, are passionate about passing that opportunity on and wanting to sort of celebrate, you know, that aspect of them and help them, you know, tell their story and really feel empowered in doing so. Over the course of 5 years of doing this and growing our program and connecting with women who want to get involved and have some, you know, hike or paddle trip or what have you. And they're like, the idea of that being for a cause and a story that they can tell is really compelling. And there are some, I think, still barriers to really feeling able to step fully into some of those roles. And so we're trying to create a space where that feels more possible.
You're listening to a Guillermo Mash Imagining Community interview with Allison Wright, co-founder of the Kern Project, whose homepage is cairnproject.org. Now back to Allison Wright here on KZFR 90.1 FM, Peak Power Radio. Yeah, and I think you're doing a wonderful job of it, as I can see. So maybe just a little bit of history for the numbers, folks. There'd be people on there kind of wondering, you know, how many groups you've helped and how much money that you usually help raise. Maybe a little bit of the semantics and how much you've helped these groups in the scope.
So it would be make typically $5,000 grants. It's not a huge amount of money, but it's not no money, particularly if you're talking about, you know, a small volunteer run local group. That could be a big deal. The money is typically used for scholarships to help make programs more accessible to young women whose families can't afford them. Also for gear or other needs to make sure that girls, even again, if their families can't afford, you know, to get them all the stuff that they need to go on the backpacking trip, that's still an opportunity that they can take advantage of. And we've supported, I think, 17 different groups around the country so far. We've channeled $190,000 in grants to date. So, yeah, you know, we're proud of our track record, and we've still got a lot more plans. And then in addition to the funding that we do, we sort of have assumed a bit of a role as a connector among groups. And so we've hosted one in-person multi-day, we called it an adventure learning summit, and it brought together some of the leaders of different organizations that we've supported with our grants to spend a couple of days backpacking and talking about, you know, their programs, the leadership that they've undertaken, and help kind of, I guess, connect the dots between groups pursuing similar missions in different geographies and, you know, sharing strategies on different parts of the work that they're doing.
Maybe for the storyteller in me, Allison, I really feel inclined to ask, you know, does one particular project or endeavor kind of stick out, and maybe a little bit of a backstory?
Sarah, my co-founder, and I, we met in Boulder, Colorado. We both went to undergrad at the University of Colorado. And so we both spent a number of years living there. And that's a community that, as you and probably your listeners know, is, you know, super outdoorsy, a lot of access. It's also a pretty homogenous community and very, you know, economically privileged one, maybe except for the college students. And one of the organizations we've supported over the years, it's called Women's Wilderness, and it is based in Boulder. But with our funding, they were able to start a new program in the summer, like a two-week camp for girls, I think ages 7 to 10, I believe it was, down in a neighborhood in Denver that's largely minority and immigrant families. They were able to provide the program free of tuition, and they also offered transportation support, so helped to organize rides and pickups, because some girls' families have a lot going on and they can't like take the time every day to drive their kids across to go to a summer program. So, I mean, Colorado's a beautiful place in the summer. It's often, you know, bluebird sky days, but the last day of this two-week program with these girls, you know, they've gone hiking, they've gone in creeks and all this stuff, and the last day is it's pouring rain, it's like super stormy, and the instructors were like, well, you know, we had this plan, we were going to do this big hike, you know, big for a 7 to 9 year old girl, but we're going to have to scrap it probably and come up with something else because it's so stormy. But the girls showed up and they were just like, no, we want to go, let's do it, let's go hiking. And so they just went after it, and they all put on some rain gear and climbed up some, you know, probably to them very big hill, or maybe even they would call it a mountain. And for a lot of them, that was, you know, their first hike in the rain after 2 weeks of a ton of firsts. And just the opportunity to help make that possible for people really feels like a tremendous privilege to us, for sure.
You're listening to a Guillermo Mash Imagining Community interview with Allison Wright, co-founder of the Kern Project. Yeah, it certainly does. I guess I'm just kind of thinking through, you know, why I'm so enamored with this project. In that, you know, I'm a dad. My daughter now is 25 this year. And, you know, I look at your Who We Support section of your page, and you put our local partners are equipping preteen and teen girls to embark on an array of outdoor adventures in their backyards and beyond by providing programs and expanding access. Kind of like what you touched upon. I got my kids out into the backcountry a fair amount, Allison, and I'll never forget this. We were up in the Five Lake regions above Alpine Meadows. It's a nice hike, kind of a, you know, and hanging around in the wilderness area up there. But we ended up watching a double rainbow for like 4 or 5 hours. It was like one of the most amazing experiences. But the story for the listeners, it's a fun story in that my daughter, the first time she had to poop, I kind of told her how, you know, you had to dig your little hole, and I gave her the shovel, you know, and she went on her way, and she came back and she had a little smirk on her face. And I said, "How did it go, honey?" And she said, "I missed the hole." And we still laugh at that story.
We've all missed the hole. It's good to do it for the first time.
Less about me and more about the organization. Talk a little bit about who you're supporting right now. I'm looking at your website. You've got a Big City Mountaineers, Wild Hearts, Idaho. I'm actually unbelievably impressed how many organizations. You know, you said you're a connecting organization, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing.
We've managed in the last, you know, year, even through the pandemic, we've supported a bunch of stellar groups. I mean, some of them are ones that we've been partnered with for a number of years, and then we have a couple of new partners. Here in the Bay Area, we support a program called Girl Ventures. They're really one of the national leaders on girls' outdoor education, and our funding for them is purely for scholarships for a spring break expedition that actually will come out to my neck of the woods here in Point Reyes for a few days of kayaking and camping. We also recently a first grant to an organization in San Antonio, Texas called the Charles Roundtree Bloom Project that connects young women who are impacted by incarceration, whose parents or aunts and uncles are serving prison terms, connecting those young women to outdoor spaces and really to the healing power of nature. So that program, they do weekly meetups, you know, that go to parks around San Antonio, and then partly with the help of our funding are planning a kind of longer excursion down to Big Bend. And then let's see, another renewal coming up is a rock climbing program that we support based out of Salt Lake, Utah. It's called Embark Outdoors, and it's run by this amazing woman who's spent a lot of time working in Afghanistan. She's a mountaineer. She has this particular affinity for working in conflict areas. And so she started this program in Salt Lake that exclusively serves girls from refugee families. So it's, you know, really compelling. The women who have been through really tremendous hardship, but having the opportunity to, you know, have a space, safe space with people who have some shared experiences, and then learning some, you know, new, fun, challenging things and developing a different relationship with nature than they've previously had the opportunity to.
Folks that are listening, maybe nonprofits that are listening, you've got something that every nonprofit should do. And to the extent and the breadth that you've done it, I've read a few of these articles, and they're amazing. But you have a blog on the Kern Project, and there are just, I've only read a couple of dozens of stories that are out there, and it's just an amazing job of kind of capturing people's voices, you know, their own voices. The one that I had read was Difficult Pursuits and the Making of an Outdoor Athlete. Meet Alex Garcia.
Yeah, no, I mean, I appreciate you saying that there's a lot on there, because we feel like there's so many stories that we haven't yet managed to, you know, get up there and get published. And it's an organization that's completely volunteer run. My co-founder and I both have full-time careers separate from it, so it's a little bit of a, you know, as time permits thing. But yeah, the blog is really, it's about, you know, creating again a space for people to tell their stories. So a number of women who have helped raise money for our programs. They've either written essays or we've done sort of interviews with them. There are profiles of women who work at some of the organizations that we've supported. Then there's a solid amount of sort of reflection from the trail kind of category of things of after or while people are out, you know, on trips, the moments that they've had to kind of think about stuff, sometimes jot down notes and then pull it together into an essay. It's cool. I mean, as it's grown, there's inspiration and I guess just memories from so many different landscapes. And that's, to me, an exciting aspect of our blog. So many landscapes and so many voices.
So many landscapes, so many voices. I might write that down and repurpose that, Allison. That's a beautiful phrase. And it's been a wonderful opportunity to talk to you this afternoon via phone. You're at Point Reyes National Recreation Area. Did I get that right? Is it a national recreation area?
It's a national seashore.
National seashore. Thank you. I'd like to kind of end on a point that I think is really important for our listeners. You know, people are kind of hearing, you know, what you've done and they might be getting excited. You know, what would you say to young women that might hear this blog about how to get involved in the outdoors and how important that is for their pursuits as a young woman as they grow into adults?
We're happy to be a connector, obviously, and, you know, share information about programs that are available, but there are a lot of opportunities out there. There's a lot of scholarship funding. So even if, you know, it feels out of reach, if you just spend a little time, you know, Googling around on the internet, there are some amazing adventures to find. And then for women or other folks who are interested in getting involved, it doesn't take a lot to make a difference. I think that's one thing that Sarah and I have realized. You know, we started this thing kind of on a whim, and it's really evolved, and it's been continued and grown thanks to, you know, the efforts of a ton of people. And for some of them, it's been small steps, other ones it's been big steps. But yeah, just reaching out to organizations in your community that are doing this sort of work and saying, how can I help, or how can I get involved, or how can I make sure a young woman I know has an opportunity to sign up? It takes a lot of hands, for sure.
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, that's the beauty of life, Allison, is it doesn't take a lot to make an impact.
Yeah.
I spent about 8 years covering poverty, the worst form of violence, and someone just texted me and saying she's been sober for 8 years, and a lot of the reason was because of me, you know, and some of the interactions I've had. And those are kind of powerful when you get those messages. But I would say to anyone listening to this is realize that every space you're in and every place you go, your presence makes an impact, and might as well make it a positive one.
Yeah, that's very, very true. So I think in general, you and I both get to live in places with beautiful landscapes, and we care about that. And making sure that young people are given the chance to develop that love, that's really what it's all about, because you're going to protect places that you love. So just making sure that they have that chance to build that relationship and, you know, put the technical devices down and get away from the screens and all that. Just get outside and adventure.
I shot a short doc for Protect American River Canyons out of Auburn, and friends of mine, mm-hmm. Eric and Paula Peach. But towards the end of the short 8-minute video, Paula said, if you want to know how you can support the American River and keep it wild and scenic, get your kids out on the river.
Mm,
and she had these
exactly.
beautiful words around raising her kids and how important that is. And, you know, how as they grow into young adults and older adults, that shapes who they are and what they do in the future. And I can't possibly say enough about how impressed I am with the Kern Project and all these little tributaries I'm learning of groups, connecting with groups through, you know, just covering the Sacramento Source to Sea, which Imagining Community, we're going to cover them at their launch all the way to the sea. We're going to meet up with them in 3 or 4 different spots, and I'm looking forward to helping to get those young women's story out there. So thanks again, Allison Wright.
And thank you.
Keep on doing what you're doing. And listeners, once again, get out there, the KarnProject.org, CARRNProject.org, and make sure you check out their blog.
Thanks so much.
You just listened to a radio edit of an Imagining Community podcast on the Kern Project, as told by co-founder Allison Wright. Much gratitude to the Kern Project and every organization providing access to outdoor experiences for girls and young women. You can follow Imagining Community on your favorite podcasting platform, as well as Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Imagining Community. We also publish a monthly newsletter at imaginingcommunity.substack.com. Until the next time, always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful.
It's time for the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar with me, Megan Hammer. Adventist Health will be offering COVID-19 vaccine clinics for the public, which started on Friday, March 12th at Feather River Health Center on Skyway in Paradise. Vaccines will be provided by appointment only. No walk-ins will be accommodated. Individuals who are interested in obtaining the vaccine can call the Customer Support Center at 530-872-2000 to make an appointment. Appointments are being taken for the next vaccine clinic, scheduled for Friday, March 19th. As appointments are filled, individuals who qualify may be put on a waiting list for upcoming clinics. See if you qualify today by calling 530-872-2000. The Museum of Northern California Art is reopening. They are happy to announce that they will be opening with 25% capacity, and face masks and social distancing will be required. Admission is $5 for adults, and children are free. I recommend checking out the beautiful and inspiring local art here in the heart of Chico. If you have an event you'd like on the community calendar, let me know by sending us an email at cc@kzfr.org. This is the KZFR 90.1 FM Community Calendar.
All right. Thank you, Megan, for the community calendar. My name's Ray Longer. Time for Playing Dead. A little bit early, but we'll take it. Music of the Grateful Dead every Friday afternoon from 1 to 3. Thanks, everybody, for helping out during our spring pledge drive. You guys rock it. I got a rocking show for you. We're going to jump back to a pretty memorable week in Grateful Dead history, that being the end of September 76. Some pretty fabulous famous shows. I've played a couple of them, Syracuse, Columbus, just name a few, Indianapolis. Oh, yeah, don't forget Indy on 10-1. But we're going to be on September 22nd. At the Community War Memorial Auditorium in beautiful Rochester, New York. The boys have known to have been ripping that place numerous times, so must be something in the water up there that fit nice with them. All right, let's thank our underwriters. We'll get right to the show. We want to thank Garden Connection, open 7 days a week at 1740 Feather River Boulevard in Oroville. Garden Connection specializes in organic soils and fertilizers, organic pest control, hydroponics, greenhouse supplies, and more. You can reach Garden Connection at 342-7762 and by CNA Cleaning, serving Chico, Paradise, Durham, and Oroville since 1989. Bonded and insured, CNA Cleaning offers regular and one-time residential and commercial cleaning services using environmentally friendly cleaning products. CNA Cleaning also offers ultrasound blind cleaning. For more information or employment opportunities, call CNA Cleaning at 514-7738. All right, let's get right to it. This whole show is great, so it was a little hard kind of divvying it up and seeing what I'm going to play for you, because I definitely want to play most of the second set. So here we go. Thanks for tuning in to Playing Dead. My name's Ray. Check us out on that there Facebook thing, Playing Dead at KZFR. Go ahead and give me a like. I'll kick you a shout out.
Cold, just a lot to wear, and even more.